Greetings, friends, and welcome to another episode of the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast, wherein each episode we fire up MS Paint to review a roguelike game, use the freehand draw tool to give our numeric thoughts on it, and add it to our chaotic collection of rogue games to revisit at season's end. I am your pyromaniac plant leader slash host of the podcast, Scarburger, and with me are my extremely pixelated co-hosts.
It's me, the king of chaos, the call of cubes, it's Andrew Harshman.
And it's me, Colin, I'm just a humble cube farmer.
And this is Will, your, your indecipherable effect.
this week we are playing Cube Chaos, or have played Cube Chaos, released on October 18th, 2023, in still early access as of this recording. This is a Steam exclusive developed by solo dev, I'm going to pronounce this, Woonarg. And your average player of Cube Chaos has about 49 hours of gameplay in it. We're just raising some eyebrows from the peanut gallery here. The Cube Chaos rolls in on our popularity rankings as the number 1,065 most popular roguelike game on our Steam dataset, with a whopping 492 total reviews, inching ever closer to that coveted crossing the 500 mark for overwhelmingly positive reviews. But before that, Colin, what is your one sentence description before the army of MS Paint squares overwhelms you? Of what one does in Cube Chaos, I should say.
Cube Chaos is a very simulationist, cube-based worms type army v army across the board, but also creates a factory of weird ants and fight until your dwarfs beat their dwarfs or plants or pyromancers.
Quite the sentence.
Yes.
I mean,
you cubes. Everything is cubes.
Everything is cubes. Yeah.
Everything. You know what? I'm going to start off the bat. I appreciate how much everything is cubes. Even cubes are cubes. Your leader's a cube.
Flagrant false advertising. The first negative for the game. They're not cubes. They're squares.
Oh.
Well, you don't. You're just assuming that you're. I assume that they have depth and you just can't see them.
Yeah, that's a matter of perspective.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I guess the literal manner of perspective. I think like
square chaos just wouldn't be as fun.
No,
square
yeah,
chaos,
you would lose
a lot
of the alliterative funness there, I think. But yeah, in typical GrogPod fashion, we have yet another instance of game style whiplash where. Why be consistent? Why go from one style to the next when we can go from the highest of highs of artistic design and style with our previous episode of Dysomancer to, I'm not going to say lowest of lows, I'm going to say humblest of humbles of art direction with Cube Chaos, where when we were trying to figure out what game to Gaslight and Incept Colin to pick for this episode. There's any number of ASCII ridden madness games out there of infinite complexity. But I had seen ruminations out there in the ether of this Cube Chaos game and people saying, yeah, this is super fun. It's very interesting. And going to the store page on Steam for this, I don't think adequately prepares you for just how insane this game is, maybe.
Where, yeah, it makes it look tame somehow.
Yeah, like it's almost like incomprehensible. Like when you're just watching the trailer for the game, you'd see like, yeah, some like little pixelated dudes moving around, and then like things on the screen and arrows, and there's yellow blobs moving around and lasers, and there's mortars flying through the air, and there's numbers popping up, and it is a force to be holden, I think.
I'm sorry, did you say little dudes? Those are very clearly dwarves.
Oh, you're wrong. You're both wrong. They're cubes.
Yes, they're cubes.
They're dwarf flavored cubes.
Indeed, there's definitely something to be said for a game that delivers on what its title implies, what the title promises. It's got the cubes, kind of, and it's definitely got that chaos factor. Whether that is good or bad, I'm sure we will determine here.
Well, I think like the first discussion point that I wanted to kind of kick off with was our previous episode, Dysomancer. I felt like it had a lot of good stuff going for it. And I feel like this episode might be like a Dysomancer 2.0 follow-up.
Oh, wait, hold on. Before we go further, I have to say that I did indeed play Dysomancer more after our podcast and beat it immediately after using the central mechanic that I didn't use. And I upped it by a full point.
And we have a new number one game here on the Grog Pod. Give it up. Wait a minute.
No, but I put it up to a 6.8. Which is, you know, pretty good. It was a pretty good game. I enjoyed it way, way more when I understood how to use the dice. Anyway, continuing on. Dice
for the record, I beautiful also beat game. The game.
Beautiful,
I
pretty.
Mention, I also am good at games.
It should be noted that numerically, while like this program is much like Whose Line Is It Anyway, where the points don't matter, the ratings don't matter here. But if people do want to get like force themselves to get bent out of shape about numbers, like the average of all of our average scores for the podcast, like across all of the very good games that we have played, is a 6.5. So a 6.8 is not bad. It is. Yeah.
I think I'm in the same boat with Will. Is like six. If it's above a six, it's like worth looking at.
Sure. I think like the IGNs and such of the world have tilted like rating expectations again, Likert scale, where anything below an 8 is garbage F tier and you should be ashamed of your hobby kind of deal. Not the case here, because we're grading on a normal distribution. And now that everyone has finally tuned out of listening to our Cube Chaos,
that's episode, not true. Wait a minute, that's not true. You have a bimodal distribution. I want people to tune out. That's why.
I actually have strictly like almost linear, but like most of my games are between 6 and 7.
Got some kurtosis going on there. Yeah.
All right. Now, just like I felt like I needed to pipe up to protect my my gamer cred by saying I also beat Dysomancer, I'm going to pipe up now to say I don't understand any of this crap and I ain't some kind of nerd. So let's move on to some exciting talk. Hey, I'm going to speed run us right to the Scott Steam Deck Corner. Scott. Yeah. Every time I'm like, well, obviously, every time I say, hey, this game must run like ass on the Steam Deck, you're like, well, actually, it turns out with just an afternoon's worth of work and fiddling, it runs great. Surely this is not a good Steam Deck experience.
You would think that
I would.
A game that you would basically have to use a microscope to see on a small LCD screen would not be conducive to the Steam Deck. When, in fact, I think most of my 18 hours of gameplay were on the Steam Deck somehow. Oh, I don't know if my eyesight been sacrificed 5 years by doing so. But like there is a way to like zoom in and pan around. But I think there's a testament to the engineering marvel that is the Steam Deck, that it can run everything from Doom RL to Cube Chaos. And I guess Baldur's Gate 3, if you really cared, you know, those.
I feel like Doom RL and Cube Chaos are not different levels of technical complexity.
They're technically complex.
They're different input.
Yes, they are input complex, I guess. But I think like this game was interesting because it felt like it ran better on the Steam Deck than my desktop computer. And
ran or played.
I think, well, good question. I think ran. I think the performance was, for whatever reason, better on my Steam Deck running, caveat, Proton Experimental, the latest build, versus full screen 1440p RTX 4070 Super graphics. For some reason, kind of chugged. And I was surprised, Colin, that you didn't really have any performance issues on desktop.
No, I didn't have any issues even when I put it up to 10x speed and the whole screen was covered in dwarves. So I guess my 4070 is just better than your 4070.
Wow.
I mean,
or it literally does nothing with the GPU and it's 100% CPU based.
I could see that because I believe, again, I have to kind of give the solo developer here props to some extent. Because it's not every day that you see a game that is literally just like running in the Java runtime environment and not like, you know, in Unity or GameMaker Studio or Godot or something like that. Like these purpose-built game engines. Like this is something that's like built from the ground up with just like straight up Java code that you can go, like you can browse into the file folder stuff and see just like, yep, there's all the code, just very much like gosh, what was that other game that we played that the source code was in all
Rift
of
Wizard.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah. Rift Wizard, I guess, is even just made in Pygame, but I wonder if
I feel like you could play this game in Excel.
It kind of looks like Excel half the time, but but yeah, I think like the performance for this game was okay on my desktop. There were some times where like it just absolutely chugged and I had no idea why. But going into the very active Cube Chaos Discord, the dev is there just slugging away every day with something new to add like every day to this game, which I'm amazed by.
When did it come out? It's in early access now, but
October 2023.
Okay. So it's not like freshly into early access. So he's been chugging away for like a year.
Yeah. But still, I think like, you know, there's, we'll get to it, but there's a lot of junk or there's a lot of stuff in this game. There's a lot of
you
stuff.
You gave yourself away, Scott.
But I do kind of want to punt off by kind of continuing the conversation from Dysomancer a little bit about cognitive load. And we like, I think one of the main drivers that we all like for these rogue style games is synergies. Synergy, synergy, synergy. Things synergizing with other things and Slay the Spire being the pinnacle of such. And it felt like Dysomancer last week had a lot of verbosity to it with lots of text that like, you play this card, it does effect X and effect X means blah. And upon resolving effect X, it does blah, 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 blah. And I feel like Slice and Dice is also kind of on that end of the spectrum of verbosity, where I'm just looking at like a screenshot I took from Slice and Dice with the item Infused Herbs. Replace the bottom side with Heal 2, Cleanse, Boost, Mana Cost. Cleanse, blah, 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 Boost, blah, 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 Mana Cost. Blah, blah, blah. Like, there's a lot of stuff to process, and Dysomancer sort of felt the same. I was a little surprised when the co-hosts here were saying that this game had a lot, maybe a similar amount of verbosity. Is that right?
I don't know if verbosity is necessarily the right word, but cognitive load for sure. I mean, how many times did you have to be like, so you say, oh, Slice and Dice, you have to like hover over to see what Cleanse does. But how many times did you have to click like three levels deep to see like, okay, this baby egg is going to turn into a baby green dragon, which is then going to turn into an adult green dragon, which is then going to do something, which you then have to read the status effect for that. And then you have to figure out how that's going to interact with your other thing that has three levels deep, and how it's going to interact with the 10 deeply different relic type things that you have, perks. So I actually wish it was more verbose in some ways, because like, despite having to read and like figure it out, sometimes I was like, I don't know what this is going to do. Not really.
I'm going to come
like,
up.
I know what
real...
I think it'll do.
You have some idea, some expectation. I get what you mean. There's a fine line. There's definitely a difference between these two concepts. But certainly I get what you're driving at, Scott. Definitely similar in terms of cognitive load compared to our previous game that we covered. I'm going to come off as more of a meathead FPS guy, a bigger dolt than usual, because there's a lot of reading in this game. And it's like not engaging reading. Like you're going through these battles and the battles can sometimes go pretty quickly. And then like, every battle you're presented with this like wall of text, and it's like, here are three things that you don't really have any idea, at least I have no idea what they do, and you're trying to parse out like, okay, which ability does what, and then you got to remember to like actually use it.
Yeah, and I think that like there's like one of Andrew's top favorite games, like Enter the Gungeon, almost goes out of its way to not explain things, where it's like you pick up a gun, it's like, oh, does this thing, or Binding of Isaac, you pick up like a bow or something, and it's like Guppy's bow, and you're like, okay, that tells me nothing about what this does, but I'm just gonna run with it and see what happens. Whereas I feel like Slay the Spire and Balatro maybe are kind of like in that creamy middle of like giving you just enough text to just like kind of whet your appetite, but
yeah, there's definitely a fine balance there that Spire certainly achieves. Because one of my really only major complaints about Gungeon has always been that you kind of have to play it with the wiki open, because there are, you know, so many extra effects that you're not going to realize are happening.
Unfortunately, you can't play this game with the wiki open because there isn't one.
There ain't no wiki. You got to go to the Discord and you got to ask, and you might get an answer directly from the dev. Who knows?
There is, however, a compendium, which it shows you, you know, it shows you like the things that you've, it shows you these, the, I think very charming MS Paint style pixel art for all of the kind of passives that you've encountered. And all of the, I don't know, what are they like units, entities? They're called cubes, but like they're things that you place on the battlefield that do things to ultimately achieve your goal of defeating the enemy leader. But like, you know, they can range from things like the healing container, which says every 10 seconds heal a random damaged ally for 1 HP. And explodes 5 before this dies, deal 5 damage to touching cubes. That's it. And I feel like
yeah, that's very understandable.
It's still like 3 lines of text. You know what's not a attack or a deal 8 damage. That's one line.
But I
don't want this. I don't want that out for this game. Like, I like that how simulationist it is. Like, it is simulating this world. It is doing like a lot of stuff. I think that you could have made it more concise in how you explain everything, or just like more correct. But I like that things do stuff.
All right, here's like the most complicated one that I can find in 10 seconds of scrolling. Eldritch Arms. Every 2 seconds, if there is a non-allied cube above, deal 7 damage to it. Burrowing. When there is a neutral cube below, deal 20 damage to it and replace this ability with Burrowed. 2x Lifesteal. This heals for half the damage it deals. Growth 2. Gain 1 extra HP 2 times per minute. And Eldritch. After this dies, a random allied leader takes damage and loses max HP equal to this cube's max HP. So that's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like, I don't know, like 6 lines of text to it where like, yeah, it does seem kind of like, or this one's got 4, but like it does seem kind of like a lot to internalize. And you're like, God, what the hell is going to happen when I put this thing down? I think in my experience, it was like, it wasn't so much like, oh no, I need to know what this thing is before I put it down. I'm just like, it's probably a bad idea to like play this, but I'm going to do it anyway because I'm curious to see just how insane it will get when I do it. In a very kind of like Noida style fashion of like, don't know what this does, but I'm going to click the button. And then when everything explodes, that's cool. I'll just reset.
But where is this thing? Where's the compendium?
It's on. So.
Oh, hell. Yeah.
The,
I see.
The main
it's
screen.
Hidden.
There you go. It's hidden.
All right.
On the far right side of
the
screen.
Why the thing here? So here's the one of the ones that I'll actually give you 2 that were weird to me. Death Incarnation. It's 100 mana, so as many mana as you can get. It's after another cube takes damage, if it has 1 or less HP, kill it. Okay. First of all, is it your 100 mana card or not? Devouring One. After this kills a cube, gain 1 extra HP. What is this in that sentence?
I think that's referring to that cube that you are placing.
It is not. It is the effect before it, which is the kill one thing. If anything has less 1 hit point or less, kill it. That is the this that is talking about, which makes it actually worth playing. After a cube dies, if this has 100 or more HP, move forward. This, in this case, is the thing itself. And then melee.
It's chaos. It's grammar chaos.
After every 5 seconds, deal 100 damage to every touching enemy or neutral.
Communication chaos.
I was just like, I mean, I won a game with this thing. It was invincible. However, I just played it and was like, I guess I'll figure it out because I don't know what this means. It's got to be good. It costs 100 mana. But like, I did not know what it was going to do.
And that can be definitely an exciting roguelike experience where, you know, you've got to experiment and try things out.
There are I'm 900 not... cubes.
Well, that's so a lot I of don't fun have... to be had. So,
it is, but I don't want to lose a run because I mean, 100 mana is like the max amount of mana. Like you could lose a run because you played something that cost 100 mana and it didn't do the thing that you wanted it to do. And now you have like wasted all of your early game mana.
That was my experience. Yeah. And that's why I got frustrated. I was like, yep, that's not fun. Why do that?
Well, I think it offers a kind of strategic push and pull to the system where it's not like, you know, it feels like you have very high value things and lower value things. And it's like in StarCraft, like you're not going to like rush out the gate with one battle cruiser and try to like overwhelm your opponent. You're going to try to like build your way up to it by like getting some forces out on the field and then like trying to survive like the one or two melee units that they send your way, and Colin is shaking his head.
Like, I mean, I feel like the other strategy is just sit and wait until you have 80 mana so that you can place the thing that lets you just auto win. Like there'll be times where I like some of the wins that I had, it was like, wait until you have 80 mana so you can play the two things and then wait till that wins the game for you.
Really? It didn't feel like that was my experience at all. Like it felt like the first, so I guess maybe like we should probably talk about like
the game works at all.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a step back.
I just wanted to throw in here real quick that, you know, reducing the number of cubes or lowering the level of complexity would take away from like what this game is at its core, which is something, you know, pretty unique and special and cool to see. What I would appreciate is, yeah, just something that makes it a little more digestible. Like even just a one sentence brief description of like approximately what it does before just throwing, like, it's not a very good new player experience. It's like, here are these, you know, paragraphs of descriptions of game effects you don't understand. And it's like, yo, like, you know, give me one sentence of sort of some general information and then the full description below. Yeah. What the heck is this
flavor
game?
Flavor text.
Said it's kind of like Worms. It is kind of like Worms.
Yeah, this is a game where your goal is to defeat the enemy leader on any given like battlefield, I guess. You are set out on a course of three maps in very Slay the Spire fashion of, you know, you're FTL, well, maybe not even FTL style. You're very much like branching node maps. You got three of them. You do combats. You do wacky events. You open chests. You get perks. You fight boss battles. You get curses. You go to shops. You know, the kind of standard rogue experience. But I think the key difference here is that your playscape is very different from anything that we've seen in a game so far, where it is you on the left, it is your enemy on the right, the enemy leader, and you win by destroying the enemy leader. How you choose to go about doing that can vary wildly depending on your starting what is it, race, religion, your class and species, and your combination of said class and species. So you boot up a game, you hit that, smash that start button, and you are jumping into combat on what seems like a relatively simple and open landscape of dirt in a kind of a concave U shape, you on the left, enemy on the right. And as time goes on, your enemy will start like placing cubes down, and those cubes will like be a knight, and it will like walk to the left every 1 unit or 1 second of time or something. Or it could be a laser and it could shoot to the left every 1 second, or it could be a bird and it could swoop down, or it could be a
poison container, which sits and doesn't move, but does heal things.
Yes.
Or a wall that eventually your wall could like fight things and move.
You can imbue your walls with consciousness and have them fight and gain strength and spread malaise and poison across the landscape.
You'd have them shoot bullets.
Just like your standard rogue game, you can have your stone walls shoot bullets and spawn replica crabs.
Right, that's in the Berlin definition, I believe. It's been a while since we recorded
and
that.
Upgrading servos.
And initially, it's just kind of, you know, you've got your layer of the ground, which stretches across the whole bottom of the screen, and you have the two forces kind of ding, 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 you know, square by square, grid by grid point, moving across and fighting each other, auto-battling each other. But over time, it escalates, and the entire screen can be filled with, you know, floating sky platforms and various, you know, magical effects and missiles and even more lasers.
Right. And also, to be clear, when we say lasers and bullets, those are actually just cubes.
right. Of
so
course.
Like when something fires a bullet, it is actually that it creates a cube that is named bullet that travels from left to right or from right to left. And it has HP and you treat it, and like even things where you're like place this thing and it does a status effect, it has zero HP and does something like cause 5 damage to all enemies 3 times or something, that is also a cube. It just goes away after a tick, unless you have something that makes it so all cubes that you place have 1 extra HP, and then it'll just like hang out and you're like, oh, I have this status effect. Or like I it'd be like if you say I cast magic missile, and then the magic missile just hangs out also, like the casting itself hangs out.
sure, like a living spell from Eberron. Or if like every spell in D&D was Flaming Sphere, where like now there is a space occupied on the map.
It's like 2D, it's like 2D side scrolling tower defense real-time strategy StarCraft Minecraft.
Indeed.
I'm curious what I think this is going to give us some insight into the very different ways that we played this game. So I was running this game oftentimes at 10x speed, and because my playstyle was like pretty simple, send out guys to attack and like build a wall to defend myself, and I put in some hotkeys so that I was able to go up to 10 and then go back down, like flip back and forth. What time scale were y'all rocking?
I was definitely playing on 10x speed for the longest time, and then wondering why. Well, I would like play some cubes down at 10x speed, not really like caring what my opponent was doing. Be like, oh, I've got my build figured out. I don't have to study what my opponent's doing at all. Scouting, learning from enemy intel. Why bother doing that? I'm just gonna build 10,000 Zerglings every single time. And oh wait, they have a thing that like perfectly counters me. Oh, well, that was over fast at 10x speed.
I mostly played at pause.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Mm. Wow. Ah, yes. And of course, yeah, the true master tactician, the Sun Tzu of this podcast, is definitely Colin.
let's not get a little too carried away there.
Well, of
how many wins did you get, Will?
Yeah, giving up. I guess I divide by zero.
A win. Got for your own, I don't know, time.
I played mostly at 3x speed, though. But I'd you know, pause 3x, pause 3x.
Yeah, so that was my style as well. That's
the more level-headed and responsible way.
And then sometimes at 1x speed, if there was like a lot of things going on and you're like, I need to be able to like place a cube at exactly the tick that it steps, I need to be able to place that cube so it's frozen so my guy can hit it. So.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm theorizing that that's the sweet spot of this game, perhaps, when you like reach that level of understanding to be able to
you know, really lord over the battlefield and control things on that more granular level, or is that not the case?
When I had victories, I did not get them from sending one guy. Like, I had the last one
two
that
guys?
I did was like every thing that I placed would shoot bullets, and then those bullets would drop bullets down, and so the whole screen was bullets.
Hey, that's up your alley, Will. I can't believe you didn't like this game.
And then, like, one of the other ones that I won, like, every time something moved, there was a 5% chance that it, like, changed gravity to a random direction for like, a couple ticks. And then I was playing on the map that had, like, a giant pool of acid above you. And turns out, when it says whenever something moves, it also includes the liquid physics. So basically, once the game got started, everything was gravity was changing direction every single tick, and it was just like, imagine playing the game except instead of ground, it was everything is floating in space and like randomly getting shuffled around, and I had to build some weird strategy that was okay, build something that can defeat a unit defeat the boss by random walking its way over until it just happens to be near the boss and then does enough damage to kill it quickly. And I'll tell you what, the strategy for that was extremely different than the strategy for the other runs that I played. So that's like that was the part that I liked. Like every, I think I won 4 or 5 times, and every time I did, it was wildly different victory strategy. Like not even a little bit the same.
Yeah, and I think that kind of underscores like the amount of variety and creativity I think that's in this game, where like, so you kick off a run and you have to select your class and species, and your class is stuff like priest, warrior, pyromaniac, wizard, you know, like all of your standard D&D classes, like engineer, chronomancer, programmer, roboticist, or no class. Or cryomancer.
The classic no class.
And then your species, between like dwarf, plant, crystal, shadow, devourer, remnant, undead, moil, chaos, fungus, no species, or elemental.
What is moil?
One of those is not like the others.
Moil.
You've never
is...
seen that Seinfeld episode? They are the ones that perform the circumcision, I'm pretty sure.
It's not spelled that way. It's M-O-I-L.
Okay.
Yeah, not H-E-L. But anyway, I think like the first one, when you start off, you don't have anything unlocked in your profile. So you are forced to play with the priest dwarf, whose description is from the priest class, every 10 seconds, heal a random damaged ally for 3 HP. From the dwarf class, always start with a sturdy stone cube in your hand. And then the unique combo of priest plus dwarf means your stone regenerates 6 HP per minute. So you have 11 classes, 12 species, and 132 of these unique combinations between them. And like the difference between the priest dwarf and the priest plant, for example, is that instead of starting with the stone, your starting leader has 10 growth, gaining 10 extra HP per minute. And then the priest plant unique combo is every 3 minutes, every ally gains 5 max HP. So even just that like little tiny difference there, like you also have you have 3 different starting cubes as a result. And your playstyle is completely different just between like those two options. I do also like that when you select priest dwarf, you know, it's got like a little... A charming little, like, I don't know, 11 pixels worth of dwarf with like a little staff that has a plus sign in it. You switch to the plant priest, and it looks like a bushy, like, I don't know, collection of lines, and but it still has like the little staff, but it's like a little plant looking staff.
Yeah, charming, you say? There you go again, using the word charming. I don't know. I think before this game set, it really acts, just needs a little bit of graphical update, please.
I liked it.
Quite click with me.
No. Andrew is right here. This is you know what this is? You guys like Cogmine. This is a similar sort of derangement.
No, Cogmine is much better graphics than this.
Oh well, that's yeah. Well, it's incredible that you think that, but this is this is to me this is below the quality of a playable game. To be honest, I mean, like it's just it's I can barely tell what these things are. The quality is just so low that it's ridiculous. You just have to look at the name and be like, okay, this is a Yeti or whatever the fuck, a mummy. Okay, it doesn't look anything like what it says it is in most cases.
I will have to say this game has the best ant pixel art we've seen for a game that we've played thus far, with a whopping 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pixels. That I saw the cube for that because I'm like, you put the little anthill thing down and you see like the microscopic little brown ants emerging from it. You hover over
like
it.
A real ant.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I understand that like the extreme low fidelity of the art is not for everybody. I kind of liked it a lot.
to each their own, I suppose. Yeah, the ant is, yeah, that is one that I would say is pretty charming. In fact, one of the most pitched battles that I had, the most dramatic encounters, was one of those shitty little ants got on top of my leader and they were having just like, you know, Duel of the Fates was playing as these guys were battling. I'm like, oh, coming down to the wire, I hope I can, you know, my DPS is enough to kill the enemy leader. So hey Colin, you oftentimes will bring up this you know, it's sort of a highly philosophical, very big-brained thought experiment where it's like, hey, if this game was completely like white boxed, if it was just like, you know, right, text, yeah, placeholder graphics, no graphics, like what?
Yeah, this is that game.
Yeah, this exactly. This is in fact that exact game.
No, and this is honestly, this is kind of what I'm imagining when I use that hypothetical of like,
sure,
assume you strip away everything to its core hieroglyphs. This is what you would end up with, and I feel like that question is a trick question for me because obviously I don't care. I'm like, oh, I find it charming when you strip it away and it's only the hieroglyphs left. So,
and it's just a bunch of little ants flailing about.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go back for a moment to pay the game another compliment. Hey, you know, yeah, that starting page that you mentioned where you're picking your class and your species. Wow, this game is addressing classism and speciesism all in one go. What a deal. I mean, obviously as a good vegan, I played the plant class. Was how I achieved my one victory. Grown a lot of hedges and sending out a lot of barbarians or berserkers. That does offer a lot of variety right out the gate. And that is, I mean, one, like, you know, major, that's one major item on the checklist of a good roguelike. Like, does it offer a variety of gameplay? Does it enrich your mind with different options to go about after your goal? And right out of the gate, it absolutely does that.
And if you are not super interested in the pace of unlock speed, which I will say again, another bonus point, like this game felt like stuff was unlocking at a pretty decent clip, and I'm like, oh, like interesting, like that's a new thing that I've unlocked like mid run, like, oh, I would be interested to play with that next time. But if that's not your jam, the game offers a quite extensive selection of cheats. There's a cheat mode zone that you can deep dive into where you can just like unlock everything if you want. You can give yourself infinite mana, you can place cubes wherever, you can place down any cube that you want, give yourself unlimited lives, making sure you can't lose, all that fun stuff. But yeah, I think that like even the times that like I did get brutalized in this game, like it was interesting because it felt like I had a new toy to play with. Like even the times that I tried to brute force a win with the pyromaniac crystal leader, I felt like, oh, you know, I'll try something else. And trying that other thing, that level of content variety definitely felt like it was there. I think also with the kind of, there's like a subtle creativity with some of the like items and events in this game where, you know, like in standard Slay the Spire fashion, you have like combats, you have events, you have like shops and things and like chests that have like you know, rewards and stuff in them. I thought the events in this game were actually like quite interesting and unique. Like one of them was just like a legally distinct version of the other similarly popular rogue style game Peglin, which is a Peggle style game, but copyright free version here called Goblin Ball, which I thought was quite
Yes,
funny,
I also just played Goblin Ball. It's good.
with like the you know, the 25 pixels worth of like getting like the little Peglin gremlin on there. I'm like, you know what? That's pretty funny. There was one.
But to be clear, when you were playing Goblin Ball, all of the things the Goblin Ball was hitting was cubes, and the Goblin Ball itself was also cube.
Ooh,
And it
was
was
also
using the
cube.
in-game weird arc physics to like bounce around. So like I mean, I appreciate that the commitment to cube is very strong.
The
Like
cube
everything.
commitment quotient is extremely high in this game.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, you're right. It's worth pointing out, like they're staying on brand, staying on theme, which I appreciate.
Did Colin, did you play the Super Mario platformer level then?
No.
There is one, I think it's called Foot Race, where it just starts your leader on the left-hand side. I think you have access to all of your cubes, and the conceit is like you have like 30 seconds to get your 30, you know, in engine game seconds to get your leader to the little checkered flag things on the right. And you know, of course, in Cube Chaos fashion, you place a cube down in order to order your leader cube to move to said cube. But there's like, you know, pits and like brick walls and like little obstacles along the way. I was never smart enough in order to get my leader across the finish line before the 30 seconds. Also, it didn't help that I was playing on 10x speed also. So I immediately hit the unpause button and like, you know, in real life seconds, like 1 second passes and then there goes like a third of my game time. But you know, it's one of those things like if you get them over the finish line super fast, you just get more rewards kind of deal.
Well, there you go. A game offering more variety, I suppose. And hey, I didn't even know that there was a Mario side scroller platformer option. Good thing you steered clear that way, Will. That would have dropped the score even further. But I guarantee that this platform has got to be better than the one in that one first person shooter. Never mind. I can't even remember the game to like complete the reference.
Not Barony. It
So
was the other one.
It'll come to me later.
I'll
Shadow
find it for you.
Reaper or something to that
Nightmare
effect.
Reaper.
There we
Yeah,
go.
that's the one.
Nightmare Reaper. Yeah. Oof, man, that was rough. But anyway, that platforming upgrade system, what the heck? Thank goodness you can disable it. So the cheat menu, there isn't there an achievement for using the cheats? Is that correct?
I think you get an achievement just for opening the cheat menu.
Just for opening it. What a deal. Listeners, there was an era where, you know, maybe you didn't have access to that many games. Perhaps, piracy was not within your grasp, or perhaps, you know, you only got a drop of new video games, twice a year, being, you know, birthday and Christmas, where you could kind of zhuzh up and like redux your experience and your playtime with a game that you had already perhaps played out by finding the cheat codes and activating various options, giving you new abilities and being able to hop around the game, perhaps to activate different levels, unlock all of the abilities, all the weapons, all the guns and things. And that era is kind of gone by, and it's pretty rare these days for there to be cheat codes, I feel like, in games, unless you count like, you know, console commands and stuff on PC. So it's I appreciate that this game includes a cheat menu, and in fact, I feel like to some extent, I feel like this is something that we encounter somewhat regularly, or more regularly than more genres. And I'm willing to bet that, like, statistically, more roguelikes include a cheat menu than the average other genre. But I don't know. I'll have to do some data mining on that. Oh wait, I said that was nerdy. Never mind. I won't be doing that at all. I'll just be going off on my gut.
Snooze.
Snooze.
Nerd alert.
Is there anything especially wacky or wild in the cheats menu? You can unlock everything.
No, I think it feels kind of like you would expect. I think like
No big
the
head mode or
big cube
paintball
mode.
mode.
I think, let's see, always at 10 lives, disable any perk, ignore node map paths. I don't know, like there wasn't like anything in the cheat menu that was like oh my gosh, like, well, that felt like it was worth seeking out for, like, oh, this is where something like uniquely super fun is. I feel like the base game itself is crazy enough that,
Right.
like, I
Yeah, you
it
don't need an extra source of crazy.
yeah, like the cheats menu almost feels like a debug menu almost, where it's like, oh yeah, I just want to like play around and see how like wacky this game gets. Yeah, I'll just set like infinite lives or like unlimited health and unlimited mana or whatever, just to see like just how wild the game looks and stuff. And I could see how that would
Sure.
be helpful from like a debug menu perspective or whatever. But yeah, I think like there's enough insanity. Like there's nothing in the cheat menu that's like make the game extra crazy because like having your battlefield be two like warring robot heads shooting lasers at each other is hard to
Right,
top
yeah.
in terms of craziness.
Andrew, did you get to play on that level?
I did not play the two warring robot heads. How large
Did you
are we
guys play?
talking?
Did you play the? Did you beat it? So you got to? Did you play it on white one nightmare difficulty?
No,
Okay, so after
I'm
you,
afraid
that's fine.
I
I don't care.
didn't necessarily do my due diligence.
that's
Yes,
fine.
but the listeners might.
Yes. So after
After
you
that.
beat it and you un you the like ascension modes, the first ascension mode is like it's not even more difficult. It's just after the end of every level, your current terrain goes away and you get to pick a new like battlefield. And
Ooh.
they are wild. And one of the wildest ones is you and your opponent both start on top of battling giant robots that have like shield generators and cannon mortars and drill feet. And I mean, they don't move, they're just static cubes. But it's an extremely different experience because you like dig down and there's like mana cores in the middle of them. There's like a lot of extra stuff. Some of the other
Wow,
levels
sounds
are
cool.
like there's one that just has like platforms that like loop around, so they go up to the top and then they like reappear at the bottom and all of your stuff loops around. There's one that's like in a cave, and if you hit the top, all the stalactites and stalagmites like fall, and the stalactites fall, stalagmites, if you run into them, they hurt you. It's quite different.
And like you were
Like
saying, Colin, like the kind of like passives that you have that like if you have one that involves like digging or something that like the picking like the shape of the terrain that like matches whatever like goofy perks and stuff that you have can like totally alter your gameplay. Or it could be like a massive like a
insta
blocker.
lose.
Yeah, exactly. Where like, oh, like my whole build is like centered around like building a giant wall and then like turtling up the whole time, and then if the enemy can just like walk on a platform above you and just drop down, you're like, well, I'm done, but c'est la vie, I guess. Yeah, I thought that
I'm
like
starting to understand more why the average player has was it hundreds of hours? Over 100 hours in this game.
that's like 50.
yeah, it's like 49. The
Oh. I don't know why I thought it was that
90th
much higher.
percentile has 179 hours in it. But yeah, I think like
Oh.
There's certainly like the pace of unlocks and then like, oh, I've just like un unlocked the rogue class. Now I can go and try to see how many of those nightmare or like ascension levels I can beat with that one. There is like a very smart button on there to say like select the lowest, which is like pick the class species combination that like has the lowest level of nightmare completion to it. And I'm like, that's like a smart way to kind of do that sort of randomization element
Yeah.
to it
I mean,
and
I
kind
think
of.
the pace of unlocks is good enough that like for me it'd be like, well, this is still just basically a random draw because
Right.
most of them are zero. You know, I've played it for 16 hours and I have like I think I've played six or seven combinations, and like combinatorially, like each time you unlock a race and a species, it's many, like it increases by a lot. So it's like, okay, you have six species and sp six races now. You have many combinations. And then each time you play them, it's like, well, this run is absurdly different than the last run, even though I started with the same thing, because I got Death Incarnate, which kills all things or something. Whatever it does, I still don't know what it does, really.
Wowie, so much content, so much depth, so much variety. We are just heaping a lot of praise onto this game. A lot of pros, a lot of pros. Yeah. Hardly a con.
And that's where we're going to end the episode. Talking. That's the end of the day.
I got a con now? Here. I got one. Say, Scott, what's the story to this game? Where does our story begin?
There happens to be in the Cube Chaos Discord a channel for lore in there where I was like, what? Kind of dabbling around, and you know, it's obviously like a tongue-in-cheek sort of thing, but there's no story to this game. The story is you learning the systems and intricacies of how to overwhelm your opponent with all sorts of like bizarre nonsense, just like kind of in a similar way to our Rogue Tower episode from ages past. No story there, just a good old time of blasting and watching pixels/cubes flood across.
Andrew, what's the story of Tetris?
Well, I believe you're trying to win the space race, is my understanding. Mm. And that the brave, glorious, venerable Soviet Union is dead set on beating the capitalist dogs to space, quite literally, by sending dogs and different animals, not very vegan, into the stratosphere and beyond.
Every Tetromino you place is another dog in space.
When you like the original NES Tetris, if you get like a certain score, if you make it to like level 20 or maybe it's like 17 through 20 or something like that. I'm looking over across the screen at my my autographed copies of the Game Boy version and NES.
Autographed copy by of, who?
Autographed Mr. Tetris? By Mr. Tetris himself. The original designer, whose name I'm not gonna butcher.
Alexei Pachitnov?
Yes, the glorious Russian language. And if you get to a high enough level, you are treated to a bespoke animation of a rocket being launched, and the size of the rocket changes depending on but to your point,
I didn't know that. I actually
on the NES version, if you beat it at a certain level, you get to a certain level, which I have gotten to, of course, you're also treated to like little dancing.
Are you invited to the Soviet Union?
You're invited you are invited, and you see like what is that famous building in like Red Square or whatever, you're
Kremlin?
Invited, and all of the all the Nintendo mascots are like there, and there's like Mario is like dancing around and stuff.
Mario and Yoshi and Stalin,
Comrade
and
Mario,
Kirby.
Yeah, another
all
famous
heroes
mustache
of the Soviet Union.
Haver, correct. Oh,
that's why Mario's all red, right?
Luigi.
but I guess your point is like, does Tetris, like what a starting like intro screen, like really benefit Tetris? Probably not, but like, But Tetris is like one of those. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of an important game. It's kind of like a foundational, like kind of frankly, sort of genius setup for a puzzle game. Like it stands on its own because it's just like so purely a good and engaging idea. The example I wanted to bring up was Rift Wizard, which has just a paragraph intro storyline. And I'm still I argued during that episode that what y'all kind of characterizes a throwaway intro scrawl about the evil wizard Murloc, whatever his name is,
Mordred
has you're out for revenge and you got to go track him down, et cetera, et cetera. I thought that was doing a lot of heavy lifting and really helped with my motivation and was something that was missing from Noida and is also kind of is also missing from this game.
I don't care. not I'm sorry, that's not valid. About your opinion, but I don't
no, I
care
understand.
About
I understand.
Having
no, I completely understand. Yeah.
It's like, wait, sorry, I don't mean to be like yeah.
I appreciate that.
Andrew, I don't care what you think.
I don't care. And I don't care about your autographed Tetris baloney or the
Actually,
goofy
I'm pretty
photograph
jealous of that.
That
that's
you
pretty cool.
Took with the creator.
with Mr. Tetris himself.
Can I jump in? I want to make sure.
All right, Will, set it on fire.
This has to be addressed. Okay, what is it, 16 by 16? Is that the cube? I think it's about 16 by 16. That's unacceptable. That's unacceptable in this day and age. And so what I did is I took a quick screen grab of the primary little dwarf guy. And this is, hey, Dev, if you're listening, take this to heart, maybe. What you do is you go to, I don't know, any of these generative AI services, and you say, make a better version of this. And it'll give you a 64 by 64, a 128 by 128. It'll give you pixel art, which is discernible. And I highly recommend bringing the game into, you'll reach a much wider audience, because I mean, in theory, I like this kind of game, but I cannot tolerate this type of graphics. It's just,
So what you're saying, if Slay the Spire was on a TI-86, you could not fathom the lack of graphical complexity.
It would be, that would be real tough, real, real tough. Yeah, it's gotta have some kind of aesthetic appeal.
And no joke, Will has in fact done this just now and posted it. And hey, that's a pretty good looking little dwarf sprite.
Right, the little dwarf does guy. Look nice. I think that like there's an element of like uniqueness with like the what's the bullet point that I have in my Google Doc?
Meaning it's never been done before. It can't be replicated, nor should it.
My bullet point here says, yeah, the art is bad, but it's entertainingly bad. I think that like there's like the ones that's the maw, where it's just like a giant mouth, and it is quite literally just a giant mouth with like 8 pixels worth of teeth. But I think it has like, you know, like it's not, this wouldn't win any awards at some like Met Gala or anything. And I don't know. Like, is there a risk?
And coming
of, like,
down the red carpet next, let's see how they're dressed. Why it's priest dwarf with his little I don't know, sandwich board sign.
This is Atari.
I don't think
though, right?
That you can say that. I mean, yes, it is better. I'm not going to argue about that. But if you shrink it down to the size of the actual pixels in the game, it loses almost all the definition. Like these they're not pixels in like, oh, pixel art, where it's like, ha ha ha, you know, you, like each of these pixels is actually like 100 pixels wide. Like it's getting pretty darn close to like each pixel in this pixel art is 1 pixel wide. You can't make it smaller because the icons are so small on the screen. Like I think that that's part of the reason that you get driven to this kind of style in some of these games, is that you can't create more visually complicated images and have them be legible. Like you need it to be almost stylized, because I can't see the facial expression of the dwarf when he's literally like actual 64 pixels tall.
I think that, yeah, this is just I think it's a very simple issue to solve. I think that right now with the way I'm playing, like each of these cubes is just, it's huge on my screen. And you just make it a higher resolution version of that. Yeah, Scott, yeah, that looks, that's, Scott just shrank it down. Yep, that still looks much, much better.
Well, I mean, again, we're not playing on Colin's level. Like, I'm kind of goofing, but I'm also half not goofing. Like, his battles are far more complicated and grand than ours.
Yes, exactly. How many bullets did you get? No, I'm not going to say that you couldn't make it better. I honestly, so what I think, Risk of Rain 1 is like
just,
the...
He continues to post in our Discord smaller and smaller, tinier,
I mean,
tinier,
like
little
each
dwarf,
one of these,
man.
Each one of these cubes has like the visual like complexity of like an emoji in Discord or something. And it's about the same size. So it's
barely.
Like, and so I think that like, yeah, yes, but like there's like, kind of coming back to like the Tales of Majayal episode, like the
that's
art is
what
bad.
I was about to reference.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like the art is bad, but like its own unique flavor of bad, which is still interesting in a sense that like, you know, how do you like compress, like Colin's saying, like readability, like being able to shrink it down and still like understand what that thing is. Like the image that Will posted is like, is good. Like it's very good. It's very obviously a dwarf. It looks cool, but like, it kind of looks like what I would expect like a dwarf to look like in sort of any indie game, which is like the dwarf in this game doesn't look like anything that I've seen before. It just looks like almost some sort of like, I don't know, weird looking goblin.
That's exactly it has discernibility. That's what I'm talking about. Like, you have to know what it is when you're looking at it.
But I gotta Photoshop this for a bit.
All right, we're getting some live Photoshopping, folks. And you know, famously, I'm usually fairly critical of AI stuff, but this dwarf, he's got some character to him. Yellow eyes, interesting choice.
Yeah, I mean, if you scroll up,
it's because it's pulling, it's stealing the art.
Oh right,
that other dwarf.
That's right. I don't know. This is maybe another item that could be added to the cheats menu. High res ultra HD mode.
One of the games that we played with the greatest pixel art, Cogmind, where you can switch back and forth between ASCII and the very good pixel art.
Exactly.
I think it's a key press. I know Will doesn't like that pixel art, but that's, you could do something like that where it's like, here's your fun, charming, maybe slightly more like visually distinct icons versus things that look slightly better. But I honestly think would be, dwarf is pretty fine, but some of the other ones that you might have trouble distinguishing, like, what is that? Like, it, which of the many bullets is this? Like, well, this one's red and this one's green and it's like hieroglyphs. Emojis.
Sorry to interrupt here, but I do want to point, in addition to the AI generated pixel dwarf, pixel art dwarf, Will also posted his prompt, which starts with the word please. Please make a high res version of this quote dwarf.
You have to ask
if you can
nice.
Even call it that.
That's so when the T-5000 comes,
still pixel art.
It'll spare him from the robot minds. Maybe just to kind of conclude this point on low fidelity art, a stay tuned and a half game that I've been trying to gaslight Colin into picking for ages, Caves of Cud.
I'm waiting for you to pick it.
You're waiting for me? Oh, okay. Well, we're going to have some kind of like Cold War standoff. The image that I posted is like of the sprite work of like all the starting kind of character classes that you can pick from between like a dream tortoise or a gunslinging bird man or a minotaur or like weird things related to that. And it has there's not a whole lot of pixel complexity going on in it, but and maybe like once we get to our Caves of Cud episode, we'll appreciate this a little better. But there's like a unique kind of flavor to it that like, yes, like objectively, it would look better if it was upscaled by some AI system. True statement. Can't argue that. But I think it kind of loses some element of its own unique like artistic soul by doing that. Where like, yeah, I mean, like if every game upscaled AI stuff.
See, Scott, this is you don't know what you're talking about here.
This
all
is
right?
True.
So what you do? So now what? The modern game maker. Okay, I'm putting myself in this category, right? Because I'm using these things daily. Yep. If you want to make art, like you're not just saying, "Oh, give me a cyberpunk this, that, and the other." No. You go through and you're making 1,000 images. You're finding the unique style within that to grab a set to say, "Okay, well, based on these, make a new set of things." You get 1,000 more images. You start refining, and slowly over time, you're basically getting this huge swath of images, and you're boiling it down into something that is distilled art, I think, essentially. Like it's a very you're interacting with it. You're not actually drawing every pixel, but like it's a reflection of the style that you want. And I think it's not just like, you know, this was the first, you know, image generated by I'm not gonna name the service, but
and it's incredible and we should ship it, and AI is above reproach. I thought Caves of Cud though, like famously had a remake, like an update of.
You're thinking Dwarf Fortress.
Oh, okay, never mind.
But I mean, like, how do
but
we know?
Be,
how
do saying.
We? How do we know
from.
That the dev from Cube Chaos didn't run through 500 prompts of AI to generate the Snow Knight, which is just a white head with a little bit of like tan stuff on it with three legs and some sort of like white sword.
Which, look at that.
You know, like it, like, yes, like a five-year-old could have drawn that in MS Paint. But
I'm slowly coming around. I appreciate that they bothered to add these like horizontal lines. Like that's supposed to offer up some definition of the armor.
I think
impressive.
I think Risk of Rain 1 is the one that we should be looking at. It has very good pixel art for very small enemies.
Right.
It's visually distinctive. You can, like, they look good. They move around a little bit. They look like they took a lot more work to make. I kind of get the feeling this is not that kind of game. Like, this game isn't like, oh, I want you to have the most visually stunning experience. It's, I want to have the least amount of work done in order to express my vision. And my vision is not having beautiful pixel art. It's
put some glasses look at on all these things, bad vision.
Look at all of these things and figure out how they interact with each other and create this chaos mode and have it be like weird, intense puzzles. Like, the cognitive load is the draw. Like, can you beard scratch your way out of this weird situation with this extremely strange set of perks that you've managed to acquire?
Yeah, this game definitely about Cogman right now. This definitely is a game that has engaged in what I most recently referenced was in Rift Wizard, which is the infernal bargain, the roguelike bargain of, like, we are not going to waste any time on the graphics. We are going to spend all of our effort on creating the sophisticated system, which is something, and there's something to be said for that, I think, and that's something sort of special to Roguedom, that level of granularity and potential for chaos. But it still does look like ass. Rift Wizard, Rift Wizard, I did find charming, but at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know, the discussion of visuals is still relatively subjective. That's
got great music. Burnout.
Yeah,
just imagine that AI generated little dwarf man just doing a little happy jig down at the village of dwarves to that soundtrack.
There's a couple things that, like, this game is not want for content at all, but there's like a couple things that I wish that, like, maybe the developer would, like, focus more on like this instead of just adding more cubes, which is, one, I think, like, the boss fights didn't really feel like boss fights. They just kind of felt like regular fights. Regular fights with, like, extra, like, harsher curses applied. What was the other one? There was boss fights. And, oh, I guess maybe the music also. Like, I think the one track that plays on this game in a constant loop, like, is fun. It kind of fits, like, the low fidelity theme. I kind of want more of that, like, low fidelity, like, baseball synthesizer.
Yeah, just take that one tune and feed it into AI and make it do many tunes.
Hey, there you go. As we were discussing before, yep, recording. Right. And I think that, like, one way that would be interesting to kind of, like, maybe, Andrew, to your point about thematic draw, would be to have, like, you know, you pick a starting clash and species at the start of the game. Like, there's no reason why you couldn't have, like, enemy classes and species combinations that you come across that would be, like, specific fights that, like, oh, this is this fight upcoming, either a boss fight or, like, a cursed, like, high stakes fight, could be, like, your priest dwarf up against a rogue devourer. You're like, what the hell is this thing? And kind of giving you, like, a hint of what's to come in the unlocks. And, like, wow, I didn't know that, like, you know, that was, like, a combination of stuff that I could face up against and, like, what they were capable of. I think, like, fighting the other kind of class species here and there would be, like, an interesting element to add, maybe for boss fights or what have you. But that kind of felt like it was missing. It felt like a lot of the fights were just, like, you with a carefully crafted build versus just, like, I don't know, random stuff. And, like, well, you know, it was fun, but it didn't feel like I was up against something. And Andrew, like you were saying with Rift Wizard, the little mini bosses that you come across in that, like, you're fighting other enemy wizards that are, like, on your level. And you're like, oh, whoa, this feels like I am like fighting, like, a rogue wizard from, you know, the school of Fireball, or, like, the Fireball Academy that, you know, went rogue, and now I have to defeat him on my way to defeating Mordred or something. Like, that kind of, like, little bit of flavor to it, I think, goes a long way. And this game isn't worse for not having that, but I think it'd be like...
It is worse, actually, though.
I think, you know, like, that would go some distance to providing some extra little flavor to it, maybe. I don't know.
I think it's I think it's maybe not like that specific kind of flavor, but having a stronger flavor for the bosses, for the levels, some sort of theme. Like, okay, cool, I picked the ice level. Besides the fights, there's nothing that is different about the world map. There's nothing different about the events. There's nothing different about the boss. Like, there's everything is completely independent. So there's no connection between them, which is like cool in theory. It gives you the most permutations, but it also makes it a less cohesive experience. Like I joke that I don't care about story, but I do care about having like
theme,
some sort of narrative thrust, even if it's like your own, the meaning that you make out of it. Like you're telling your own story in roguelikes. You're like, I'm the story that comes out of like, oh, I had this build and I was doing this thing. Like having a consistent something in there makes it a more compelling, even just internal story. Like, oh, I beat the bird wizard. It's like, like most of the time where I won, like I have no memory of what I was actually playing against.
Yeah, because it's just like this random assortment of enemy cubes versus
It's just like, oh, I beat a grab bag of cubes and it was difficult because they happened to have one thing that kind of countered my build. But it wasn't their build, it was like one random cube they had.
Right. I guess before we go to rankings, I did get a little bit of community write-in for Cube Chaos.
Let's go to the mailbox.
And so let's see. So the AI prompt was, you know, what would you say was the most kind of Cube Chaos moment that hooked you? And we have Pav that writes to say, I was first intrigued by the non-standard choice of races that the game offers instead of the typical fantasy. Since you start with dwarf, you might expect something like elf next, but the game hits you with sentient plant, crystal, shadow species, et cetera, et cetera. The other big hook was when I saw that every class and species combination had a unique combo and sprite. It's instantly so much variety and so many unique combinations. I would also say that I'm the type of player that likes to do novel stuff and novel strategies that not only I've never played, but possibly nobody has. And 250 hours in, there are still cubes and perks I've never used in a build. There are still class species combos I've never played once. And then I see someone post a game where I somehow literally don't know what synergy is happening. Sometimes not even the dev can easily tell. And I go, wow, I have used those cubes, but I never would have thought to do it like this, which is to say that basically the roguelike honeymoon for me is when I feel like I can jump in and do a build which synergizes in a new way that I've never seen or thought about before. And Cube Chaos is like drinking from the water hose of novelty after novelty after going strong still after hundreds of hours. Which, yeah, I think like the variety and the starting classes really underscore that. Legend of Runia says, I think the thing...
Oh, but real quick, Padis, yeah, hey, great points, especially at the beginning. I mean, yeah, you know, we kind of said some of the same stuff. So obviously you're very wise and a wise listener. Thank you for writing in. 250 hours, pretty impressive. Sorry, what was the next one?
The next one is from Legend of Ruina, who says, I think for me, the thing that really sold me was hitting shadow on the unlocks, the shadow species. Dwarf and plant are kind of similar, but shadow really just has an entirely different game. And I went in and tested this. I did a shadow priest because I'm like, well, how different can it be? And yeah, it was like playing a completely different game where like, I'm just poisoning all of the stuff on my side of the screen. There's got to be something I'm missing here. And yeah, like there's, it's just like every little bit is so different. And then finally, Darloth here says,
Legend of Runa, great write-in. What a deal. Excellent, outstanding, good. I realize I didn't write directly in, but I guess you're on the Discord, right?
We'll take credit for it. Okay, and then Darloth says,
Which also, Legend of Runa, that's actually a title. It's going to be coming up soon from Purple Cloak Games. So watch for that.
You joke, but there is a rogue game, I think, Library of Ruina.
Oh, really?
We'll get to this in a minute, but Listener Request Week is coming up after Andrew's pick, and people have been writing in for wanting us to play the very uniquely styled rogue deck builder, Library of Ruina. that that people seem to like.
Library, that sounds like a lot of reading. I'm out.
But what about Runa?
Rune, sure, yes. And then Darloth says, the first time I saw a streamer misuse the add-on cubes, which I don't think we talked about, but add-ons are a specific type of cube that you place it, and then you place another cube, and it inherits the abilities of the add-on cube and deletes the add-on cube. So it's like...
Unless it doesn't.
Yes, exceptions. But yeah, I think
Darloth, that's great. Thank you for writing in directly to us, having listened for sure, definitely, and for teaching me what add-on cubes even do. So that's great.
There you go. There's always something to learn, new to learn in 200 plus hours of Cube Chaos. We didn't even talk about the Blatant Boon system or the different scenarios, but I'm getting the sense that we're leaning towards the rating end of the spectrum at this point.
Yeah.
Unless we have anything left last to discuss before hammering down with our final judgments that will
play the judgment cube.
Yes. And in typical fashion, ending on a high note, let's have Andrew launch us off with the judgment cube.
Well, yeah, you know, you say that, like, we start, you know, with the lowest score. That makes it out like I'm some kind of, you know, big mean guy on the right side of the screen and a giant evil robot trying to stomp you to death with drill feet, unless you're into that. I don't know. In reality, a quick disclaimer, reminder, these guys hoodwinked me. We had a different rating system, and so my scores can be disregarded, basically. So this is my new number. How many games have we reviewed? My new number 38. And usually the way
out of how many?
Out of,
you know, that's the denominator is not important.
Many. So generally what it kind of boils down to, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, game reviews are, you know, you get a sense of like the reviewer's tastes, and you kind of, you know, judge that next to your taste and go, do I have similar interests in games as this person? And so basically what I'm saying is no one can get mad at me, especially not in the YouTube comments. Like that one person, that one time, I've been reading the comments. It's a slippery slope, but anyway, usually I go through my list and I'm just like, all right, you know, which of these games would I rather play, Cube Chaos, or would I rather play, you know, Remnant from the Ashes? Probably Remnant from the Ashes. All right, next one, let's go down the list. And I was going way, way down the list until I got to Against the Storm. And I 100% would rather play Cube Chaos than Against the Storm. That's for darn sure. Yeah, it's a very low score, but I admire this game does a whole lot of things correctly. And it does, most impressively, I think it takes advantage of that classic roguelike format of, like, you know, simple graphics that are conveying and representing like this rich background and series of chaotic systems. I mean, at $8, hey, that's a pretty good deal. Hundreds of hours for $8. Whew. In this economy, come on. All right, who's next?
Up next would be our Misery Carrier Cube, which would be Will.
And just to clarify for everyone out there who is wondering, Andrew's was a 38 out of 42. Just wanted to
Make sure
everyone was aware there. Yeah, so I'm coming in at a 4.5 out of 10. It's below our recommend threshold, and that puts it in the company. And this is, I think, mixed praise and blame. But it's in the company of Cogmind at a 4.5, which is
excellent
to say,
game.
From my point of view, not so great here, right? There's so many good things in theory about this, but the execution of indiscernible cubes is bad. It's just bad. I love simulations. Simulations are amazing and fun. And I love the concept of the roguelike, the auto battler. I love that genre. But this it's not it did not come together well for me. And that just as we mentioned, like these descriptions of what these cubes do being many, many, many lines long, with where you have to dig deep into, oh, it creates this, which creates that and the other. It's it makes it so it's, as someone who likes the cognitive load, I want to be able to understand the puzzle pieces that are in play, and then I want the interesting part to be how they interact together. I don't want to have all my cognitive load being like, what the hell is this thing? Yeah, and I'm gonna put 100 hours into the game so that I get that, so that I can, oh, now I appreciate it. No, you gotta get me at, you gotta hook me at the beginning, and this failed to do it. So yeah, 4.5.
Up next would be the, let's see, what's a good up next is our reviewer, the Israna Doom of Kingdoms, Colin.
What? Is that a cube?
The king of Arcrist?
What?
Here we go. Curious Moyle. Curious Moyle.
Okay, there we go. I were those other two cubes?
They are. I don't know if I've actually played them before.
I don't know what that is. I didn't see those ones. Yeah, so I'll be the Curious Moyle. I'm going to give it a 6.9. I won't disagree on the quality of the pixel art. I will just disagree on how much that affects the quality of the game. I did not find it to be objectionable. I found it to be in service of the overall goal of the game, which is just to smash as much chaos into one screen as possible. I didn't love the descriptions and how difficult it was to like truly understand how, you know, if you're picking between three rewards, how is this going to affect your run is an interesting question. What will this cube actually do is not an interesting question. And I found it frustrating how many times I was like, I don't actually know what this is going to do when I place it down. So I can't accurately predict if this is a boon or a blight to my build. However, I did find this game to be fairly fun. I got the requisite amount of chaos out of it. Like it was pretty wacky. There was some stuff like I got some really good broken builds out of it. It felt like finding the thing that lets you hack your way into a win was rewarding. I can imagine a version of this game that I would like a lot, like 8 point something. It's not quite there yet, but based off of how active the dev seems, it might get there eventually. It might take a little bit of like copy editing to get there, but I could see it getting there. Like the Kit Fox pass over Cube Chaos, Chaos Cube, whatever this game's called, Cube Chaos. I think could do a world benefit to it. So bring us home, Scott.
Yeah, for me, ending on a high note, this will be a 7.85 for me, tying it with a similar solo dev weird game that's at a similar kind of interesting level of jank. One Way Heroics, I think, kind of fits the same sort of thematic level of nonsense and dedication to it. Yeah, I think like this game was sort of a pleasant surprise to me. I, for whatever reason, like the cognitive load doesn't seem to be really there for me here, which is strange because I felt really overwhelmed by Dysomancer. I think the art for this game is super charming the more time that you spend with it. I think it's a little overwhelming at first, but once you are brutalized by that white and red robot enough times, you're like, okay, I know exactly what to look out for next time. And like the art is very minimalist, but I think very clear, especially when there's a lot of stuff on the screen. And I feel like that's a very hard thing to balance. I think the pacing for the unlocks and the XP gain are really on point. I think there's a lot of interesting and fun decision-making as you progress through the different maps. Like, do you want to spend one of your three hearts to do this thing? Do you want to go into debt in the shop and like try to fight off like debt collector monsters? Like, there's a lot of very interesting and creative, unique twists on the formula that I just haven't seen anywhere else, which I'm very appreciative of. I think there's like some amount of jank here that I think is just kind of a byproduct of the game being just programmed straight up in Java. And yeah, I could see like if this game did get some sort of like big polishing pass, like not even necessarily with the art, but like with some of the UI elements and just some general like UI UX flow, I think would go a long way. Yeah, like for whatever reason, this game just super jived with me, and I like there were multiple times where the last thing that I was thinking of before going to bed was Cube Chaos, and the first thing that I was thinking of when I woke up was Cube Chaos for whatever insane reason. But I felt super compelled to like I need to go and finally beat that last boss. So really, really like weirdly engaging for me. I think some extra terrain types in here would be interesting. Maybe a like a thematic boss fight or two. And I don't know, maybe the daily challenge mode being on the front of the screen. I don't know. There's so much stuff in this game. It's hard to kind of pin down like what else would be needed to make this game really stand out. But I think it stands out just from the zaniness. I think it like the title suggests, there's cubes and there's chaos, and I think it delivers on both fronts in a maximalist fashion. Yeah, I think finding similar games to Cube Chaos is kind of a Herculean order, but the ones that I have listed here, we have previous episode Slice and Dice, I think, in
Oh yeah.
terms of just like wild synergies. Cube based, also very important.
Oh yes,
I think
actual cubes, three-dimensional, beautiful rolling cubes.
Rogue Tower to some degree, just with like the tower defense aspect. Luck Be a Landlord, I think, shares a lot of like very low fidelity but charming art and synergy stuff. Stay Tuned and a Half, like broken build stuff, would be the traditional roguelike Path of Acre. I think if like playing that, you would understand. Art wise, the OG, the very first roguelike deck builder ever made, I think, to its credit, Dream Quest has a very similar kind of art style to it, of like
Well,
almost going out of your way to be MS Paint style.
that's yeah, that's like someone like draw like drawing I mean it's like more resolution, but just still really janky 5-year-old drawings.
And very recently released a tower defense game called Gnomes, I think might fit the bill here. But there's one game that kind of, I don't know if this is super related gameplay wise, but it reminds me of like jank plus polish, is Geometry Arena, which the first release of it, super janky, like very feels like a like very much like a prototype, kind of feels like Cube Chaos in a way. And then Geometry Arena 2 feels very much more of like it got like a Nintendo pass to it. And like cleaner UI, like just kind of pops. It looks maybe a little more mobile gamey as a result. And I wonder if that's something that's kind of missing here for Cube Chaos. But
Well,
anyway.
there's also, I mean, I know this isn't a rogue-like game, but I will point out Heroes Hour, if you want an auto battler that is like chaos and where you're responsible for like placement of troops, essentially, that was a really fun game.
Heroes Hour.
I mean, if it was I don't know if we can call it rogue-like, but I would like recommend this one. I mean, like it's random, it's
Sure.
procedurally generated. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's chaos. It's for sure chaos.
Yeah. Cubes and chaos. Before we start the wind down, well, I guess this is the wind down procedure here, where I do all those the very important social plug stuff. Grogpod.zone is the website. More roguelike related shitposting from our Discord that I'm copy pasting to Mastodon, grogpod@gamedev.place. And importantly, our email, grogpodzone@gmail.com, where we got a very nice email from a one David Nguyen out at Columbia University who writes in to say, "Hi, Grogpod. I love the podcast. I made sure to leave a rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thank you, David." Not the reason why I'm reading the letter. I found your analysis of gameplay really insightful, and the banter between the hosts seems very genuine and fun. I know you guys joke that no one listens, but I can say that you have at least one human listener. I also used to host a very niche podcast on an exceptionally niche topic. So I really respect that you guys have kept the niche podcast going for so long. Keep up the great work, from David.
Ah, what a guy.
Aw.
Thanks, David. Much appreciated. And yeah, shouts out to whatever university you mentioned.
Columbia.
Go marching Columbia, the fighting dwarves, their famous mascot, as we all know from Columbia.
Yes.
The fighting cubes. Well,
the the Columbia cubes. Yeah, boom, yes. Nailed it.
Well, the low fidelity ASCII art, or not ASCII art, MS Paint art of Cube Chaos. It's reign, Andrew, is coming to an end because you have something that looks like a very interesting pick for our next episode here.
Yes, indeed. Fire up that dash button and fire your development team, because we're going to be covering Rainbreaker, the Hades-like that just launched. And, you know, hey, we sometimes, don't necessarily want to cover brand new games. We want to give them a little time to cook, you know? But in this case, it's done whether or not you like it. It is coming to your table. They're bringing it out of the kitchen because they sure as hell ain't going to be updating this thing. I think it will be a fun time to discuss and, pretty fun game in general. So looking forward to that. Rainbreaker next week. No, 2 weeks.
Yes. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to playing more Hades likes, as it were. The Grog Pod Hades like podcast. I guess importantly, I should have said this in the other thing, but like website. You're listening to this on some sort of thing. Like, slam the brakes on the highway. Like, open up the YouTube video and write the comment below. Cause as much of a traffic jam as you possibly can, and write into. To tell us what game you want us to see playing, because after Rainbreaker will be our listener request episode, which people are writing in on that Google form, and related to that, as I vamp for time.
Absolutely, write in. Tell us to play the original Rogue. Tell us to play the Rogue FPS mod. Tell us to review Noida again, because that's a really good game, as it turns out. If you're good at games, which I still haven't beaten it, so what do I know? But we're getting
there.
I'm
not 100% sure you can beat Noida.
Well, a regular victory.
It beats you. regular commenter on the YouTube channel, Davian Fuchsia, wrote in to say that he sent the game title off of the homepage. If you go to the homepage, grogpod.zone, the About tab has a little Google form you can submit there, or write in wherever. He said that he sent in Rogue's Tale, and he said, "How low of a score can it get?"
A challenge. It comes with a challenge.
It's been a long time since we played a really bad game.
I did say that. people would be surprised at how much effort I've put into trying to find what the objectively worst Rogue game on Steam is. And then he replied back saying any picks that you would have reserved for just a show. And I got a list, believe it or not, of bad games that we could go through. So like objectively bad ones, not even just like ones that it could be for somebody. Some of these, I'm not quite sure who these would be for, but maybe that would be an element for another Fight Club discussion. Colin, you would be remiss to know that Hyperlight Breaker is on that list, unfortunately. But
I mean, I'm not shocked. I am saddened, but not shocked.
It's in the same list as Meme Mayhem, so there you go.
Yeah, proof that lightning sometimes doesn't strike twice.
It's true. Oh, but, no, mixed reviews. What? This is the first I'm seeing of this Hyperlight Breaker. You're breaking my heart.
Yeah. Well, Will's giving us the, all right, it's time. It's time.
He's tapping on his tactical G-Shock watch. We got to go.
Yeah. So to play us out from Cube Chaos, as we bring order to Cube Chaos, playing us out here will be main_song_3.wav from the Cube Chaos OST. Play us out, Wunarg.